we're in section B, verse 4 to verse 10, in which Krishna's bade-abade relationship with the material world is being briefly described. So we got up, I think, to verse 6 yesterday. So the basic idea expressed in verses 4 and 5 is that everything is within Krishna, but it's not within Krishna. Sort of like everything is Krishna, but it's not Krishna at the same time. So this is bade-abade. Of course, it's rather achintya at the same time. It's rather inconceivable. But there are a few ways that we can think about this situation in order to understand it a little more clearly. So the idea, basic idea, or one basic idea is like the energy and the energetic. The energy cannot really be separated from the energetic, but at the same time it's not exactly that the energy and the energetic are precisely the same in all regards. There is oneness there, a qualified type of oneness, but whether there's also some difference. Just like, well, one example that Prabhupada would give is the example of the sun and the sunshine. The sunshine is coming from the sun, so here outside we can see the sun shining. So when you see the sun shining, then you know, oh, there's the sun. It's a sunny day. The sun is there. But it's not exactly that the sun is just right immediately outside, or that the sun is coming in, if some beams of sunlight are coming in through the window, that is actually the sun. But at the same time, you can't separate it from the sun. Wherever there is sun, there's sunshine. Just like wherever there's fire, there's heat and light. You don't get fire without heat and light. Heat and light are inherent qualities of fire. But the fire may be at the other end of the room. And the heat and light, they may be at this end of the room. So you can't, even though the heat and light are not separable from the fire, but still you can see, oh yes, there's the fire over there. And I'm standing here at some distance from it, and I'm standing and experiencing the heat and light. So it's one and different. And this is how Krishna is explaining things here. If you take away the sun, then there's no sun rays. If you take away the fire, there's no heat and there's no light. At the same time, wherever there's heat and light, you know, oh yes, fire is here. And wherever you see the sunlight, you know, oh yes, the sun is around at least. So this is one and different, the idea of energy and energetic. The idea of Brahman and Bhagavan is also very similar. What is Brahman? What is the Brahmajyoti? Well, it's a rather technical subject, actually. It's not quite the same as the light bulb and the light coming. Not quite the same. We understand that actually the Brahman is Krishna himself. But he's not manifesting his form and he's not manifesting his personality. That's explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in the second chapter of the first canto, verse 11. Any of you know that verse? Brahman Paramatma. Very nice. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So these are these three features are three features of the absolute truth, or not exactly that, but they are the absolute truth in three features. There's a difference. They're not three features of the absolute truth, but they are the absolute truth in three features. Bhagavan is the complete feature. He includes Paramatma and Brahman. Paramatma is a partial feature who includes Brahman but doesn't include Bhagavan. And Brahman is a partial feature which doesn't include Bhagavan and also doesn't include Paramatma. In that verse, the word Advaya Jnana is used. Non-dual knowledge. Non-dual means not two, and certainly not three or four or many. Not two, but one. The one absolute truth is known in these three features. So Brahman is Krishna, but simply Krishna is not manifesting his form and he's not manifesting his personality. So, in this way, it is Krishna, but it's not Krishna. It is Krishna. You can't say it's something else. Wherever you've got the Brahman, you know Krishna is there. You can't separate the two. But still, it's not exactly Krishna in a complete manifestation. And then again in verse 6, the example of the relationship between the wind and the sky was given. The wind is in the sky, or in space, but it's not mixing with that space. So it's in it, but it's not in it at the same time. So this is, of course, it is actually a little achintya. So these things which are achintya, they do tend to remain a little bit achintya also. But hopefully we can get a little bit of the idea. So Krishna goes on in verses 7, 8, 9 and 10 to give some examples of this achintya bade abade relationship that he has with the material creation. So in 7 he's explaining that it's all coming from his nature, from his potency. 8 is expressing another sort of achintya feature of this whole situation. He says that under my will, it's automatically happening. This is also a nice idea. So it's happening by his will, but it's happening automatically. If you've got something which is happening automatically, like a machine is ticking, an engine is just running, something like that. So it's not that every time the engine moves that you are there or the driver is there making it move. It's happening automatically. But it's not exactly simply happening automatically. It is working. The whole process has been begun by a person, by the will of a person. And for the process to continue on, the will of the person has to be there, otherwise the engine will stop sooner or later if it runs out of petrol, or maybe it will break down. So it is being supervised, but if you look at it, you see, oh, it's just going on automatically. So it's bade abade. Automatic, but it's not totally automatic. It's going on under Krishna's will. And in verse 9, Krishna expresses it very nicely. He uses the word udasin vat, as neutral. And Prabhupada translates that in the verse that I'm ever detached from the material activity, from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. Now this may sound like we're getting a little sort of over-wordy, too much into word juggler. It's not actually word juggler, but we're trying to get a few definitions here. Krishna's saying that I am detached, but then he says that I'm seated as though neutral. He does not say that I am seated neutrally. He says that I am seated as though neutral. In other words, he's not really neutral. But it really does seem that he is. In fact, it's hard to say, is he neutral or not? But actually, He is involved, but his involvement is very subtle, and it's very much behind the scenes. Like the idea of the string of pearls, the relationship between the string and the pearls. It's a subtle relationship. You don't see it very easily, but it is there. And verse 10 also, it expresses it quite nicely. Maya adyakshena prakriti. Adyaksha means, or adyakshena means, under my eyes. Literally, adyaksha means under the eyes. So this material nature, Krishna is saying, which is one of my energies, is working under my eyes, under my direction. I'm ever detached, as though neutral, but it's going on under my eyes, automatically, but by my will. So it's like that. A little achintya, but there's definitely a subtle relationship. And if Krishna were to ever actually withdraw himself and give up his contact with the material nature would cease to function and everything would fall to pieces. But Krishna is not, like, involved, working hard, holding the material world together. As Prabhupada said, Krishna doesn't have to go to the office every morning to report in for work, keep this material world together. He doesn't have to do that. He just has a good time. He enjoys himself. But still it's going on under his supervision, under his eyes. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives a very nice example. He gives the example of Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish, he was a great devotee. And he was always absorbed in Krishna conscious activity, chanting and hearing about Krishna, worshipping Krishna. And he didn't really bother getting involved in all the details of the management of his kingdom. But the kingdom was working perfectly, because everyone knew that the king is there simply because of his presence. Even though he wasn't really getting involved in it very actively, but just because of his presence, everything was working very, very nicely. And if he'd left the kingdom, it wouldn't have just gone on so nicely. That going on very nicely was actually dependent on his presence. So, now we go on to section C. Talking about non-worshippers, non-devotees, and worshippers or devotees. So verse 11 is a well-known verse. Avajananti mam mudha. The mudhas, or the ass-like people. People who are really fools. They don't accept Krishna when he appears in the human form. They have so many ideas about Krishna. They think that, yes, Krishna is there, and Krishna is this tall. You know, maybe he's about the same size as me or something like that. He's occupying this much space, and he's living, he appeared at a certain time, and we assume that he'll go out of existence after some time, just like us. So why should we take it that Krishna's any different from us? But this is a big mistake, a very serious mistake they make, thinking that Krishna's just one of us. They don't understand that that form, this is the important point, that form of Krishna is the absolute truth. In the seventh chapter, there was one verse in which Krishna was saying that the abuddhaya, people who have no brain, they think that I was impersonal before, now I've assumed a personality, and when my body is finished, at the end of the life of this body, then again I'll return to my natural, impersonal state. But Krishna said there that this is an indication of their being abuddhaya, they have no intelligence. Not just alpamedasa, like the demigod worshippers, small intelligence, but abuddhaya. So here it's the same idea. That little form of Krishna, or like here on the walls we have a number of pictures of Krishna. So Krishna, like here next to Bhakta Mark, under the light, is Gopal Krishna. So we may think, oh yes, it's a nice little picture of Krishna, maybe it's 18 inches high and a few inches wide and it's being printed on a piece of paper and that's what it is. But no, Krishna is here. Krishna is here in person. And when we say Krishna, we mean the absolute truth. That within this form of Gopal Krishna printed supposedly in ink on paper, everything, the entire spiritual and material creation, including us in our little corner of the material creation, everything is within Krishna here. Now you may say, no, no, no. How can it be? But it's a fact. That little, any form of, bona fide form of Krishna is the complete absolute truth. Not just a representation, not something like that. A pastime of Krishna's which illustrates that very clearly is the Damodar-lila. You know, in the Damodar-lila, Mother Yasoda was trying to tie Krishna to a grinding mortar. And first of all, she got one piece of rope. She felt it would be big enough, but it wasn't. Two fingers too short. Then she got another and another. Eventually, she got all the rope in the village. That wasn't enough. And, you know, that's quite a lot of rope. Then she got all the rope in all the villages in the whole Vraj Mandala. But still it was two fingers too short. So why? Why is that? Is it just that Krishna is putting on a mystical display, playing like a mystical game with her? No. Actually, what the situation is that little form of baby Krishna is the absolute truth. And the summum bonum of everything. So how much rope do you need to tie around everything in existence? Well, you can't do it. What to speak of all the rope in Vraj Mandala, even all the rope on this planet, all the rope in this universe, all the rope in all the material universes wouldn't be enough. So it appears that, oh yes, just a little baby boy, he's this big and you know, he cries and plays around. But actually, that is the absolute truth. And that is ultimately why Mother Yasoda couldn't get the rope around Krishna's body. But when Mother Yasoda became more and more anxious in love for Krishna, then Krishna was forced to allow her to tie that rope around her. And then she wouldn't have needed all the rope in Vraj Mandala. Even that first piece of rope would have been enough. Because Krishna, because of her devotion, he surrendered to her. And we know actually that in the end of that pastime when Krishna delivered Nalakurvara and Manigriva, Nalakurvara and Manigriva were standing there offering prayers to Krishna that you have delivered us and you're the Supreme Lord and you're so great and you're so wonderful. But then they noticed that, oh, you're tied up to a grinding mortar. What happened? So they thought, well, this is not very nice. This is God tied up to a grinding mortar. We'd better untie him. So they tried to untie him, but they couldn't. Then Krishna tried to untie himself, but he couldn't. It was only when Mother Yasoda came, and she was able to untie Krishna. So actually, Krishna was bound by the ropes of love, not just bound by some few feet of rope or even a few miles of rope, but he was bound by Mother Yasoda's love. So this is the nature of the form of Krishna. But here in this verse, Krishna is talking about people who don't understand that fact. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says that if you don't understand the transcendental nature, the real transcendental nature of Krishna's body, then even if you're a devotee, you won't be successful. even if you're a karmi, doing all your duties very perfectly to go to Swarga, to go to heaven, you won't be successful. If you're a jnani trying to merge into the Brahma Jyoti, but you disrespect Krishna's form, you won't be successful. Actually, you'll go to hell. Even if you're a strict follower of Varnashram, but you disrespect Krishna's form, you'll go to hell. And that is made quite clear in the next verse, verse 12. Krishna says that people who are holding these different wrong ideas about Krishna's, about his own body, thinking that it's material, thinking that he's just some sort of mystic who performed some austerities in his previous lifetime, and now he's got some special abilities. So people like who think like that, then Krishna says that they become attracted to demonic and atheistic views. Somehow or other, they just become impelled towards demonic and atheistic views. Rakshasi and Asuri. Rakshasi means mode of ignorance. They become very violently inclined. Mode of ignorance. And Asuri means mode of passion. They become very attached to lusty activities. So this is what happens. They lose their discrimination because of disrespecting Krishna's form. Verses 13 and 14 describe the nice qualities of the devotees who do appreciate Krishna's form. That they are placed under the direction of the spiritual nature. Particularly because they've accepted the spiritual nature of Krishna's body. Therefore they are ananya manaso. This word ananya, we've come across already a few times, we'll come across it again. Means undeviating. Their minds are undeviatingly fixed on Krishna. And they're understanding Krishna's position very nicely. And so what do they do? Verse 14 explains. They become inspired to always glorify Krishna, always serve Krishna, offer respect to him, serve him wholeheartedly. Why? Because they've appreciated his form, the transcendental position of the Supreme Lord. Then in verse 15, Krishna mentions three other categories of persons. The Ekatvena, Pritaktvena, and Bahuda Vishvatomukha. Ekatvena means the monists. Eka means one. Those who feel themselves to be one with the Supreme. Pritaktvena refers to many like demigod worshippers, people like that. They concoct, they imagine that someone is God, someone who's not God. They think, oh, he must be God. Shiva's God, Brahma's God, Durga's God, Hanuman is God, Kalima is God. Someone is God, but actually that person is not. So that's Pritaktvena. And Bahuda Vishvatomukha means people who worship the universal form. In verse, going on to section D, verses 16 to 25, the first four verses are describing the practices of the Bahuda Vishvatomukha. Those people who are worshipping the universal form. These are all different features of the universal form. The Kratu, the Yajna. Kratu means the strict Vedic sacrifice. Yajna means a more Puranic type of Smriti sacrifice, Prabhupada says. The divisions within the Vedas. So Kratu refers to the strict Vedic sacrifices from the four Vedas. Yajna refers to the sacrifices from Smriti Shastra, or the Puranas, Itihasas. So Krishna goes on 16, 17, 18, and 19, describing different features of the universal form, which are worshipped by these Bahuda Vishvatoma Kana. Of course, at the same time, in terms of how Krishna has explained things in the seventh chapter, Maya Sakta Mana, that our minds should be attached to him, we can also appreciate these four verses as giving us further ideas about how we can appreciate Krishna's presence around us. So it can also be helpful like that. Then verses 20 to 25 are going back to the subject of demigod worship. Verse 22 is a special verse. We'll speak about that a little separately. But otherwise, from 20 to 25 is discussing again demigod worship. So in 20, Krishna is saying about how people may follow different Vedic practices and be elevated to Indraloka. He says they're purified of sinful reactions because they have followed the Vedic rules and regulations. Baladeva Vijabhushan makes the point that this does not mean that they've actually become purified of all sinful reactions, like a devotee. Not like that. But he says what it means is they've become purified of those sinful reactions which would take them to hell. They're free of those, but it's not that they're actually free of all sinful reactions. Verse 21 explains how they eventually fall down again. Now, if they were purified of all sinful reactions, how would they fall down? They wouldn't fall down. But they're not purified of all sinful reactions. Our acharyas explain, Baladeva Vijabhusha, he explains that just before they finish all their pious reactions, while there's still a little bit of piety left, then they fall down. So then they may be born in a situation on this planet or a similar planet, a situation on in this type of this part of the material realm, which is very nice. Or they may manifest some particular qualifications because they've still got a little bit of their good reactions left. Prabhupada, as an example, he gave the Beatles as an example. Prabhupada said they were musicians in the heavenly planets. But then when there was just a little bit of their pious reactions left, they fell down. But they still had a little bit there. So, you know, by our standards, they were quite exceptional. They were very clever. They were very fortunate. But slowly they burnt up that little bit of remaining good karma. John Lennon, I think, was the first one to do that. Any of you who are familiar with the Beatles would know what I mean. So he got heavily involved in sinful activity, John Lennon, more heavily than the others. And he ran out of his good karma and he was killed. So it's like that. Or someone like Mozart, at a very young age, he was coming up with all sorts of beautiful musical compositions. From where? Was coming from his previous lifetime and from that little bit of good karma he still had left. So anyway, then they come down and then they have to more or less start again. Now I said verse 22 is very important. It is very important. Krishna, starting here and going on till about verse 11 of the 10th chapter, Krishna is going to reveal some very important secrets about Bhakti Yoga.